Good afternoon. My name is Jerry McDonough. I'm a real estate appraiser. I have a company, Integra Realty Resources. We have 50 plus offices around the country. And I also have a company, Marine Vest, which is involved in the transactional or selling side of marinas. Currently working, I've worked throughout the country. Currently working on a project in California. Just finished one in Kentucky, Texas, Maryland. So I sort of have a sense of the marina market. Interestingly, when I tell someone in Rhode Island that there's a 125-foot boat in the middle of Kentucky, they look at me like, what are you talking about? It's hard to comprehend, particularly people on the coast, understanding what really goes on in the middle of the country. I'd like to get a sense of just what we have for people in the audience. Do we have, how many owners do we have?
Wow.
Good. That's great. How about appraisers? That's great. And all right, so we'll get us started. I'm going to be looking at this from the valuation side today, but any time you want to ask a question or whatever, I'll open it up to anything as we go along rather than wait. So we just have an interactive type presentation. Marina and Dock Age, the November-December 2019 issue, has an incredible amount of information on the trends, the current trends in the marketplace. So I don't think it's necessary for me. I just suggest pick up one of their issues. And it's amazing just how much information is in there. And I think it would just make more sense for you to have the time to go through it. But it is a plethora of data that is invaluable. As noted, the caption in their article, increasing occupancy rates and gross profits. So that seems to be the trend in the industry that's been going on for quite a while. On a national basis, boat registrations in boat registrations between 2017 and 2018. Dropped slightly, just under 1%, so it really is nominal or negligible. 2019 information obviously is not available at the present time, but will be out probably sometime in January or February. Interestingly, in Montana, there's a 22% increase in registrations. Not quite certain what's going on in Montana, but over the past 6 years, probably 8 years, investment bankers have really recognized marinas as a viable asset class. As we all know, the voracious appetite that's out there for marinas that are being acquired pretty regularly. The barriers to entry into the marina world is attractive because, unlike self-storage or office buildings or retail plazas, where we all could go out in 6 months, probably permit something west of Nashville. Permitting a marina, as you know, is next to impossible or at least a 10-year push. So it really gives the lenders and owners the comfort level that the saturation will not happen like it has happened in other asset classes. Today's landscape, we have a lot of great companies that are out there that own multiple marinas, Safe Harbor, Suntex, Westrac, Southern Marinas, Oasis, Morningstar, and there are others. But it's really, in my opinion, great for the industry. As an asset class, years ago, we did not have any income and expense information. So from a lender's point of view, they really couldn't understand it. And even from a buyer's point of view, and even an owner's point of view, how do they compare to their competition? So what we have today is an amazing amount of information that's being gathered, and as we move forward, that information will start filtering down into the banks and that, and getting lenders more comfortable with our industry, with the marine industry. there are a lot of different organizations out there that are actively involved in the marina landscape. ABRA is one. It's American Boat Builders and Repairers Association, about 200 members. They're actively involved in training and trying to get people involved in the trade. Then we have a lot of state marine trade organizations. Do most of you marina owners belong to your state organizations? Yeah. Then there are coastal resource management councils for clean marinas. And the benefits are enormous from the clean marina program for saving and protecting our marinas. Okay, as an appraiser, and even as a buyer or an owner, you really want to focus on what interest are you buying or leasing or whatever, but the fee simple interest is just outright ownership. There are not any leases involved. It's like pretty much how you own your house in a fee simple interest. The lease fee would be where you actually are leasing, say, the property. Example would be leasing it from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Leasehold interest would be another part of the tenant-renter through a lease transferring the rights of use and occupancy. And then you have the going concern value, which is if you're ever going to sell your facility, you want to sell the whole shooting match, the going concern. In other words, the business, real estate, not just the real estate as part of it. So the typical upland features that you have the total land area. The important thing is usable land area. How much can you actually use? The wetlands, the dimensions, the configuration. Some sites are rectangular, other sites are all over the place. You want to know what easements or encroachments are affecting it. The zoning. Zoning is a key thing. A lot of marinas are on other zoned land for residential uses, so it's in some instances a legal non-conforming use. This is obviously a very important point when either buying, appraising, or leasing a facility. Where are your tanks? What are they? Are they above, below ground? When will they install? Double-walled, single-walled? In a lot of instances, my experience has been, unless you're pumping a lot of fuel, there is not a very notable profit margin that's sitting there, typically around 18%. But for the risk that's involved, you need to be able to justify the amount that you're pumping. Other facilities, improvements on the upland, you have your dry rack building. What's the width of the interior fairway? Is it capable of supporting the boats that you want to be servicing and storing in that facility? Come on. With the rack building, your load capacity, your width, your height, your cubic feet is what you're dealing with as opposed to linear feet. Capacity and age. This is obviously the heartbeat of the facility, and with the travel lift well, the water depth is always an issue. Is there a siltation problem? That's what I always want to know. I want to find out how frequently that has to be dredged and how easily it can be dredged with permitting and all the other issues involved. Always a breakdown of the equipment list. And we always request a copy of the owner's insurance policy, which is extremely important. Obviously, we want to save as much money as we can, but in my opinion, insurance is not where you want to do it, because if an investor is interested in purchasing your property or investing in your property, you want to make sure that you're covered if there should be a loss. And lenders, obviously, should be very careful to make certain that their loan-to-value ratio is absolutely covered in case there is a loss. Did any of you attend the insurance seminar yesterday? Was that beneficial? So this is just a summary of a typical income statement. go back on this one. Okay, your typical revenue sources that we see, we have your wet slip, your moorings, your summer upland outdoor storage, your winter outdoor storage, dry stack, your transient, boat maintenance and repair. Boat rentals, that's turning out to be a huge revenue source. How many of you have boat rentals that, do you find it lucrative or worth doing?
Yeah.
How is your insurance affected? Is it notably different than what you had before? No. So this would be a breakdown of, if you're looking at the various reports that are available, that as an appraiser or as a buyer, you would want to be looking at. You know, how many boats can be stored on the upland? Linear footage is, or square feet is probably for the upland storage, one of the key units of comparison. And a lot of times, owners are not maximizing their storage potential. This is a typical facility, just showing what the upland's like, and then and you bring in the waterfront component into the whole situation to see how many boats are actually there. This is the Hinckley facility in Rhode Island. They've been on this site for probably 15, 20 years. It's quite a busy operation that they have. All right, what are some of the waterfront basin area features? You have your basin area delineation. Where's the nearest waterway? Your navigation channel, your prevailing wind, which is extremely important because if you have a fairly big fetch that's going to end up with wind banging away on your facility in heavy storms, it can be a real issue. What's your highest wave height? Attenuation, breakwater protection. A lot of issues are now with the chains versus actually piles going into the seabed for the attenuation. They're important items to consider. Siltation is, in my opinion, one of the most expensive issues at most of the facilities I look at. Have you ever dealt with the siltation and dredging? And no. Well, that's great. That's great. We'd always ask for a detailed plan of the basin area so we know exactly the length and the width of each slip, the function of utility. Marinas that were constructed 30 years ago may not be able to accommodate the new boats of today that are built today. I mean, understanding the layout, you know, is it functionally adequate? And can it accommodate the typical boats in your market area? We always try to get a detailed breakdown. A lot of times people say, well, how many slips do you have? Well, how big is a slip? Is it 20 feet? Is it 40 feet? I think that what we need to speak in linear footage, how many linear feet do you have? Because that's really where the revenue is being generated. If you have 20-foot boats or 40-foot boats, this is the unit of comparison. And a lot of people, when they say, well, what does it sell for? Well, people aren't thinking price per linear foot, but if you start analyzing transactions on a linear foot compared to slip, you'll really see a lot of consistency in the linear foot range as opposed to the price per slip. We'll get into more of that later on. Deferred maintenance is a significant issue. This is obviously a bit of an exaggeration, but I've seen this at a lot of different facilities, and it's... It's kind of sad that they don't have the time to take care of that. But an important thing is from an appraiser or an investor or whatever is, in my opinion, is a property conditions report. It's money well spent, and it's something that I think that, just another example of deferred maintenance. This is just an example of what some property conditions reports look like. They break down for the condition of the facilities, the dock facilities, right down through the electric. How many have purchased a marina recently? Did you have a property conditions report prepared? Just surveys of the...
Right, right.
From a sighting point, a fetch is also extremely important. Just how much is the distance between the open water and the land? In this particular instance, before it was probably about a mile across. So something coming out of the west could be a real issue. But this is Newport, Rhode Island, down in the bottom here. But what they call Goat Island breaks a lot of that fetch that's come the wind coming in. You know, wave attenuator is an important aspect, but I've always tell people, if you're going to buy a marina or you're appraising a marina or just sort of surveying a marina, don't look at it on a nice day. You know, go there on the worst day you possibly can to get a sense of really what goes on there. You know, examples of the bulkhead on the right, obviously in perfect condition. On the left, very challenged. And this can be a very expensive proposition, up to $1,800, $2,000, $2,200 a linear foot, depending on the depth of the water or the length of the steel that you need. The fairways are very important. I found that at least 1.5 times the boat length that are in these slips is required. You'll see some that are down one times the boat length, but that gets pretty tricky in trying to maneuver within the basin area. So we're always looking at the type of docks, type of construction, you know, the type of flotation. How many still have the styrofoam under their docks? Anybody? And are you in a process of replacing that, or is it, yeah. And have you been given a certain amount of time to do that, or no? Well, that's great. That's great. Once again, the siltation dredging. Has anyone dredged recently? What was your overall cost? Pardon me? Wow. And how many cubic yards? Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Now, is that something you'll have to do in 10 years, or is that... Pardon me? Every 2 years? Wow. Huh. That's an expense you don't want to miss when you're buying a facility. Did you know about it when you bought the facility? Oh, that's good. You know, the winter ice conditions are another big issue, particularly, and not everywhere in the country, obviously, but there's some parts that it's pretty challenging. Bathymetric study would be the study of the basin area, the depth. I think this is very important if you're investing or lending or just outright buying something. You want to know exactly what is your water depth that you're working with throughout the basin area. So once again, you know, for the waterfront description, there's obviously quite a few things to take into consideration. You know, the number of main docks, uncovered docks, width of the main docks. You know, is there an ability to decrease the size, the width of the actual walkways so that you can increase the square footage or linear footage of the boats in the basin area to increase your revenues income? What's the highest and best use of a facility? What's unique about marinas, unlike office buildings or retail plazas, with retail plazas, office buildings, apartment buildings, you pretty much have, that's what it is. But at least with marinas, the waterfront land, if something should go south or sour, you do have an alternative to develop that upland. Or even to incorporate it into the plan. But this, in my opinion, is an underutilized upland area. It's located on the East Coast in close proximity to New York City, so there probably is an opportunity here for significant residential development in concert with the slips in the basin area. The sales comparison approach, this is a really difficult one to utilize. And once again, but most people say, how much price per slip? What did it go for? And we'll go through some photos here to show you the difficulty and why I don't think this is even relevant. But I do have a recommendation as to how this approach can be utilized in a meaningful, possibly a meaningful way. You know, this is your, what I call your cheese and cracker marina. You know, the big boats down in front, there's really not a whole lot to do, but just make sure that the owners are happy. But as far as a lot of employees or extraordinary work, it really doesn't have it. So it's a very straightforward facility. That's what I call a mom and pop. It's probably a misnomer. It's probably the hardest facility to operate. It's a boatyard, and there aren't any real slips, so your revenue is being generated from the boat maintenance and repair. Definitely challenging. And back to, again, this is a true full-service facility with, you know, significant buildings on the upland for boat maintenance and repair, and then you have your basin area that accommodates fairly large vessels. And then the shipyard. So when you're appraising or trying to buy these, trying to find comparables, it really comes down to the revenue that can be generated. You can't compare this on, you know, price per slip or price per square foot or whatever. There just is not any general consistency there at all. This is an interesting operation, and extremely difficult to compare, but this particular operator utilizes the whole town. You know, number one is about that area down below, and the foreground is about a mile away from the boat ramp, the public boat ramp. Number two is right in the middle of town, where the retail store is located. Three is a whole mooring area and slip area that they utilize, and the other is a repair facility. So this is an interesting example of how you can't say what's the price per slip. There isn't anyway, but it's a unique operation, this is the ship store downtown. So rather than just waiting for customers to show up at your marina, this person's taking advantage of all visitors coming into town for his ship store. And these are the slip moorings in the foreground. I'm going to do that. And then the repair yard farther down south. This is what I would call a cheese and cracker marina from an appraiser standpoint or whatever. This one you can use on a price per slip or price per linear foot basis, because that's all that's there is just slips. There really isn't any real notable repair business. So if you're thinking of buying something and you can find another one like this, then you can use the sales comparison approach. But rarely do you find facilities that are just, all they do is rent slips. This is an off-site facility. It's located probably a mile and a half from the waterfront, but it's obviously able to cater to 30, 40-foot boats and utilize and develop and operate on significantly less expensive land area. And that's the distance that they're running from a public ramp up to the yard. This is a facility that has a significant boat rental component. So in trying to, the only way to really value this is the income approach. You can't look at the sales. You can, but it gets a little tricky because of the large rental component that's boat rental. It's involved. This is just another repeat of the photograph we saw earlier. Another example of both covered, uncovered. It just gets down to the income approach. Trying to say on a price per slip basis makes it difficult. This is a facility in New Jersey. It's right across from Manhattan, but the two big buildings down below, they generate about $3 million a year, maybe three and a half. So if you were going to use this or compare this with others, you'd obviously try to get that out of the whole analysis. But it certainly compromises the comparison. Another facility that is in Florida that has a significant upland operation. Tenanted operations. Once again, the only way to analyze this is on the income basis. This is facility in Newport, Newport Shipyard. Extremely difficult to compare, to find other sales to say, well, gee, they paid this much per square foot or whatever. This one recently was acquired. So price per linear foot as opposed to price per slip. Now, this is how you can use the sales comparison approach. And it's in the appraisal business, I think it should be more on the income side, the income approach, but it's called a gross income multiplier. And what it does, you have your gross sales, your gross income, and then you have your cost of sales, and then you have your adjusted gross income, and you stop there. Because what happens in developing a cap rate, I'm not an advocate for cap rates, but the boat's already left the dock and everyone's talking cap rates with marinas, but it's really hard to take a full-service boatyard and say, what's the cap rate? And then take that cheese and cracker marina, what's the cap rate there? But people are doing it, and they're coming up with these very... I've seen a lot of instances where the boatyard cap rates are the same as the cheese and cracker. It just doesn't make any sense because there's so much work that's required to operate a boatyard facility. So that cap rate, you would think, would be a lot higher. But this is what I'm advocating, and I would like, I'd really like to see the whole market go to the income multiplier. But that probably won't happen because they're already into the cap rates. But I don't know if you can see this, but I apologize. But you have your total revenue, let's say $2.9 million, less your cost of sales, gives, and you have your adjusted gross income. So you stop there. Don't go down into the expenses where, because maybe there are too many employees on site or too few, there are extraordinary expenses from environmental issues that you have to handle. So you have your sale price. In this instance, I'm using $14.5 million. And then your adjusted gross income, you divide that into the sale price. And there's your income multiplier. So I think that if you had the ability to collect a lot of sales information, you'd see some true consistency using this unit of comparison as opposed to the cap rates, which are sort of all over the place. And so this takes a lot of the mystery out of the adjustment process. Cost approach is, in appraising, we have three approaches to value, and this doesn't make any sense in valuing a marina. Number one, trying to find land sales to add on the depreciation, depreciated value of the buildings to come up with a total value. It's but if you're using the cost, it's price per square foot, not price per slip. So various income sources that are taken into consideration, your dry storage, your haul and launches, docks, boat services, your diesel. This is sort of an older, but how we will break down just to compare the revenues over a 3-year period. So you can get a fairly good idea of what's happened in the past couple of years. And these are in a fairly close range where things are pretty much uniform across a 3-year period. And your cost of sales, typical expenses. This expense ratio is actually at 63%, in my opinion, is notably higher than most. You'll typically see the expenses in the 45 to maybe 55% range. Once again, some of the operating expenses that are taken into consideration. And then down to your net operating income. Some of the items that are difficult in analyzing a facility, your service, your boat maintenance and repair. If you have three similar type properties, you may want to reduce this to a percentage, to a rental rate, a percentage of gross revenue generated from this. Maybe it's 10%, 8% when you're comparing. this is Liberty Landing again, which showed you earlier that had the restaurants up front. But interestingly, that circle is a little barge, and that's where they do all of their boat maintenance and repair, which and they generate a lot of money. It's pretty amazing. So it's a great example of, number one, you don't have a building on the upland. Number two, you got a really tiny thing in the water that's making a lot of money. And and that's the repair and maintenance building. These are the revenue sources, the boat sales, the boat rentals. So your insurance with the boat rentals is not notably higher than before you had them? I don't know. I mean, fuel is also a really revenue source that can distort the analysis, particularly in comparing facilities. Insurance, this is one expense that I've seen a lot of consistency amongst facilities in that 4 to 6% range. Is that what most of you owners, you think you're in that range, or are you higher or lower? Higher, yeah. Some more expenses. Typically, we'll include an off-site management fee, particularly if it's a regionally or nationally recognized marina. And then reserves for replacement. I think that this is an extremely important expense item. A lot of people don't want to include it, but you need to repair your docks down the road. You need to make other improvements. And if these are, if reserves are not included in the analysis, I think that it's you're ending up with a misleading conclusion. So this we'll get into the cap rates. So you know, where do the cap rates come from? What are they? But I thought I would take a look at sort of some other sources. PricewaterhouseCoopers publishes information for office retail lodging, and I found this one interesting. Where the third quarter of 2019 is 5.52 for something in the Central Business District, and it's 5.66 in 2015. So things have not really changed dramatically over the past 4 years. And I'm not saying that you want to use cap rates from office buildings for marinas, but at least it gives you some sort of, and this is compared to a marina, marina's a full service operation, but so these rates at 5 and 6% are not really indicative of anything. The retail is the same thing, pretty much hasn't changed over the past 4 years. But the one we do look at would be a hotel. A hotel operation is a full service. It's sort of like a marina. You have a lot going on. You have a lot of repairs. The hotels have the FF&E, furniture, fixtures, and equipment, like a marina has the docks or whatever. So I'm not saying that this is an answer to the cap rate, or what should they be, but if you look at the third quarter 2019, it's at 9.5 and 8.78. I don't want to stand up here and tell you what cap rates should be for marinas, but probably not that far out of whack. Let me ask you, where do you think, as owners and investors, and cap rates are today in the marina world? 7.5 for a boatyard type with a full service? No. Pardon me?
Full service luxury.
Full service luxury. Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Bronstein. Where are cap rates today? I won't hold you to it. Right. So, in summary, following the trends in the marine industry closely, the detailed permit history of the marina, the durability of the third-party leases, and the property conditions report, which in my opinion is extremely important. It's something that it's well worth the investment. And the income approach is the primary approach. So I thought I'd just move through this quickly. Are there any questions I can we want to address? Yeah.
Cap rates.
Where do I see cap rates?
You see it's cap rates.
I hate to be quoted and setting a pattern, but you're seeing rates that are under 10% and lower. This gentleman has said 7.5. That I don't think you're going to see that on all facilities. Right. But you're well maintained, unless the facility is very challenged with either siltation issues or extraordinary expenses. Above 10% is probably high. Pardon me?
Now's the time to sell.
As I mentioned earlier, there's a voracious appetite out there, and I think if you were thinking of selling it, now's a good time. It's who knows where the economy will be in 2 years or whatever, but, you know. So you're going to push the button. I'd push it now, but yeah. So, any other questions? You're seeing 8%. Yeah. Well, it's possible. Start going to the adjusted gross income multiplier. We'll do that, but. Has any? In 2007? That's a good question. Unfortunately, from a transactional side, we had a lot of sales, but not. We really didn't have a lot of sales then. But cap rates compared to 2007 are obviously lower today. How much did they go up in that time frame? For the good facilities, they pretty much, there wasn't a lot of variation there. Yep. Oh, I have a question. How many are on leased land? Wow. Do you have any concerns about being able to renew your leases? So were you sort of concerned with the brother-in-law effect, whose brother-in-law is on the board? And
absolutely. There was fraud going on a government level that we had to deal with. And then when we finally got the contract, they gave us a really onerous interest rate that we had to pay for it. We went to the governor and got that reduced. But, yeah, it was a huge battle.
Were you able to finance that with a federally insured lending institution?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Good. Excellent. But to summarize it, yes, this is an interesting time in the marine industry, and there's definitely a strong demand for marinas. And so if you think you're selling, pull the trigger. But anyway. Any other questions?
Would it be possible to get a copy of your slides?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. What I can do is ask the tech guy here to, if you want to give me your card, and then I'll have him send it to you. Okay, good.
Question. When you're going off of your income multiplier, do you have some examples of that for your service center type, a boatyard type versus a full service marina? Some kind of numbers that go along.
That's a good question. Yeah, we can break it out that way, but it's the main thing is in the cost of sales, getting out of the picture and to get to that adjusted gross profit. But I really think that if you have, you're familiar with some transactions, if you start focusing, you're going to see some real consistent, and I think very reliable, because once you get down into the expenses and, you know, somebody's doing this with their dog and somebody's not, and it can really be skewed pretty quickly. So, yeah, but... The boat sales? Yeah, that's a good question. That's typically, if you're talking about outright, you're selling 26-foot boat, power boats. Yeah. I think what you'll find is a lot of interested people, or even people financing facilities, will say, let's get that out of, we're not going to include that as part of our revenue, but let's not ignore it. Let's either allocate a rent to the real estate that operates within, or maybe you take a percentage of the gross sales from that. It obviously, you know, you can't ignore it, but you're not going to really throw it into the whole mix. Yeah. Anyone else? Thank you very much.